You probably know Samantha Bee as a correspondent on The Daily Show from Comedy Central. If you don't watch the show religiously like I do, here's a reminder. Here she is expounding about the recent sex scandal that rocked the Catholic Church.
You know, the liberal media is really torturing the church, putting them on a rack and literally pulling them apart, hoping they'll confess, searing their flesh with red-hot pokers unless they renounce the so-called crimes of their faith.
See, no, you're actually describing the Spanish Inquisition. The Catholic Church itself did exactly what you're saying to non-believers all over Europe.
Oh, please. Where'd you get that? The New York Times?
No. She's a colleague. Samantha Bee is a colleague. Right? She's a news professional.
That's right. I have
correspondent on the fake daily, the fake news show. The jacket for her new book says she now holds the title of most senior correspondent, having systematically eliminated all those
before her. Well done.
The book is called I Know I Am, But What Are You? Samantha Bee, thanks so much for joining us.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You know, sure. I couldn't put this book down. Number one, it's really funny.
Thank you.
I probably read the whole entire thing in less than 2 days. But
it's
in large print. Yeah. I tried to make it simple.
But here's the thing. I found myself as I was going through thinking, this can't be true.
Oh, it can't it?
this can't truly be true. I mean, the wedding night, the cat. Mating rituals with your head.
My cat tried to give me the gift of his kittens. It was a very romantic event.
This isn't really a memoir. It's more, I think of it more like a series of personal essays a la David Sedaris.
Well, God bless you for making that comparison. Thank you. My life cannot qualify as memoir, as memoir ready. I really
You're supposed to say, I've had the most incredible life.
My life
and
has
I want
been
to tell everyone
so
about it.
Incredible.
Yeah,
and my
that's,
efforts that's in the true. Middle East peace process have been so worthy of
but
a memoir.
I got to say, your life is way more interesting as a child than mine was.
Oh,
I
mean,
you had a whole cast of caregivers because your parents were divorced. You had a stepmother who led camping trips and frightened other campers.
She was very frightening.
Your perfectly coiffed grandmother wearing pearls, even on a farm as goats attacked her. Your very liberal mother who gave you explicit sex information when you were quite young.
Explicit. A glossary of sex.
At what age?
At what age?
Seven.
Seven.
And a somewhat seems to be perpetually embarrassed father.
Yes.
But you're almost more eccentric than they are. And I want to read you just a little bit out of the very beginning of your book
here. Oh, no.
You say, I don't just mean I was a bad teenager in the usual way. Mm-hmm. I mean I was horrible in the usual way, of course, but I was even worse. So years later, when the ultrasound technician told me I was having a girl, I burst into tears at the thought of what she was going to put me through. Because truthfully, I deserve all the emotional pain that's coming to me. I ruined my parents forever. As they read this, they are mirthlessly laughing and mentally high-fiving each other.
100% true. I was so horrible to my parents when I was a teenager. I know.
In what way?
We're all horrible to our
parents.
She stole cars. In some way. Well, I went through various stages of horribleness. And the first, it began with sort of a willingness to follow men into their dank love caves for no reason.
Yeah.
Believe he was there? He was going to show you his prints.
I thought he was. I thought he wanted me to play music for him.
Yeah, your flute.
Yes. Oh, my flute. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And who was this?
Some guy
on the bus.
A complete stranger. He was like, do you want to come to my house and play music together?
What age was this?
I was about 14 at the time, and I went to his basement apartment. I mean, this is terrible. This is not,
funny.
Take inspiration from me at your peril. Let's just say that. And then it sort of progressed, and then I was just so afraid to say no to people. I thought that was something that I was incapable of saying no to people. And then suddenly I became capable of saying no specifically to my parents. And then I began stealing cars and doing other things.
You say in your book that some of these things they never knew about. Did they know before the book was published?
Well, actually, my parents have not read the book. My mother and my father have not read the book yet, although I read passages to them to make sure that I wanted to make sure I had their blessing, of course. But my stepmother did read it, and she learned things about me that she did not know. It was shocking for her. I was watching her read it, and as she was reading it, I kept seeing her go like, oh, no, what? You did? Oh, no, God. And then she was just fanning herself.
Well, I have to. How old are your children? You have two and you're expecting another.
Yes, my children are 4 and almost 2 and counting.
Because I some of this almost sounds like a warning, like you said just earlier about do this, imitate me at your peril. And I'm wondering if this would have been different if you'd written it before you had kids.
That's an interesting question. I don't think it would have been different, but I do think that my children will use it as ammunition against me. In some ways, I thought, you know, it's not going to, because people are asking me, they think, you know, they ask me, do you think it will be harmful for your children to read all of this stuff about you? And I thought, oh, they're going to use it. There's no question. But at least it's all laid out there for them. I've just given them the material. There's not much left. There's not much ambiguity.
Just like your parents gave you the material.
Well, that's
it. Her mom,
that's
anyway.
The only thing that people can take inspiration from, and this is the thing that shocked my stepmother the most, was that I wasn't on drugs the whole time. Nobody ever believed me that I wasn't a drug addict.
They thought you were on drugs, but actually you were doing other things, and like lifting cars.
Yeah, when they read the she read the book.
What's an easy car to steal?
Well, no cars are easy to steal anymore. I'm assuming, I haven't done it in a few years, but at the time, Volkswagens were our vehicle of choice.
And you just pop start them and just move right out?
Yep. And then we would rig them with a little button so that you didn't, you know, so that it was effortless to start them because we didn't have a key. And we wanted to use it for a couple of days, you know, or a week or so. I mean, obviously.
Of course you did.
You needed to do your errands.
Yeah.
Another thing that you write about here is how you met your husband, Jason Jones, who's also a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Yes.
Though not as senior as you.
No, certainly not, no.
And you met him while you both were doing children's theater.
Children's theater, yes.
And you were still senior then.
I was the senior children's performer, which is just fills me with pride knowing that. Yes, in my late 20s, still doing children's theater, costume character based.
Which is a terrible commentary right there.
Theater.
Children's theater.
Oh,
yes.
Children.
But you describe him going out in the audience as the, a prince? Or?
Well, he was the romantic lead. His name was officially Tuxedo Mask. But he just looked like a vampire. It was terrifying for the children. He was a terrifying figure.
Love at first sight.
Yeah, definitely.
And you guys got so sick of doing the show that you started tormenting the audience.
Well, particularly Jason. I mean, he was really built to do the Daily Show and torture people in interviews because he started so young with the toddlers. And he just grew from there. He was terrible to them. He's very impatient with them.
And this is how you end that chapter. You say, if only there were a television show that we could work on as a team that would allow us to explore our darker sides.
Yes.
That would give us the freedom to be actors for a living and the license to screw with people a little bit on editing for content.
Yes, well, thank you.
You were born at the right time, that's for sure.
I know. Everything just aligned. There we go.
So, I mean, I have to ask you, this book is so brutally honest. And, it sounds horrifying when you talk about going into an older man's basement. But it's hilarious. I mean,
well,
the writing
survived.
Is really funny.
I don't, recommend it for others, but I did.
And nothing horrible happened to you.
Happened.
You
no.
escaped.
Yes.
But, I mean, how was it for you bearing all of these extremely brutal episodes in your young life?
Well, I don't think they were fun at the time, but in retrospect, I really enjoyed writing about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such a pleasurable experience just remembering, and, you know, obviously, hindsight is 20/20. It was almost immediately after these things happened, but it was a good time for me to write them. It was very cleansing.
Well, I'm glad. You know, all the pain, worse or better than being a Canadian in terms of pain.
I'm so sorry about the Olympic opening ceremonies, by the way. I'd just like to apologize
well,
for that.
I will
right
accept
now.
Your apology.
Somebody should
our
apologize.
Our malfunctioning ice penises.
Samantha Bee, correspondent on The Daily Show from Comedy Central. You can actually read an excerpt of her book, I Know I Am, But What Are You? It's at our website. Head over to thetakeaway.org and click on blog. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think your next book should be titled Wasn't on Drugs the Whole Time. I think that's a great title.
I like that. I'm gonna log that.
I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.